Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and I am your host, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad. A Time for Justice is a show that discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussions of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth. And we know that the truth is the path to justice and equal protection, so let's talk about justice, fair and equitable solutions, which are in the best interest of the people. Again, I am your host. My name is Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad. Our topic tonight is entitled Righteous Defenders and Impacting Our Communities. A subtitle to that, of course, is that we're going to talk about the importance of being a good defense attorney. We're going to talk about what balancing the needs of the community. And we're going to really get into it because we have some really wonderful and very well-seasoned attorneys as our guests. Again, I am your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, and our co-host, Sister Nichelle Muhammad, is here. I want to go ahead and open up Sister Judge Nichelle Muhammad's microphone and give her the greetings. Sister Nichelle?
Yes, ma'am. All praises due to Allah, family. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is only one God, and his name is Allah, and that Prophet Muhammad is his messenger. I want to greet our family with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you, Sister Pamela. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Sister. And I'm hailing. I'm a judge out of New York, the state of New York, and I'm here. I have the pleasure to be on with my sister co-host, Sister Pamela,
yes.
Counselor, and the counselors that are here tonight to tell us about that defense side, an important side. All praise is due to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. Praise is due to Allah. And before we bring on our guests, I do have to open up the show. And as we are aware, many of us, the listeners, are aware that our sister, Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad has transitioned, and we know her janazah services were this past Saturday, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did deliver the janazah of our beloved sister, Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, and we just have to say that, you know, in the final call this week, there's an article entitled, there's so many articles on our sister, Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, and at some point in the future, we are going to do a show that is in total dedication to her and her fearlessness as a defender, a scholar, and believer. This is what the article by our brother Brian Muhammad is entitled. And there are some, you know, points that we have to bring out. She is referred to as a defender of truth, and the plight of black people, how it came from her profound love. There are people, our topic tonight is talking about righteousness, and there's actually a quote that says that Sister Ava is righteousness personified. You know, she's committed to the community.
Come on now. That's right.
It goes on to talk about how she was on the front line for oppressed people and fearless in her defense of women's rights. Goes on to talk about her tenacious spirit for freedom, justice, and equality. So, of course, as I said, our sister has so many great qualities, and we will, inshallah, have a show in her honor in the future. Our beloved student minister,
yes,
Dr. Ava Muhammad. And so tonight we are going to talk and look at defense attorney roles, and we want to work to help educate people on what they need to look for in looking for good defense attorneys, the characteristics, the traits, the descriptions. And so this is the topic that we've chose to talk about today, and I want to go ahead and introduce our guests and open up their mic. I know making sure that our guests do press the number one so they can get into the host queue and we can recognize them. So the first person, I'm going to just open up both of the mics, and that way I think we have both of our brothers' mics open. Let's see, is this Brother Attorney William O. Wagstaff?
Yes, brother, this is me.
Okay, Brother Wagstaff, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I got to start off by saying that these wonderful, brilliant attorneys, I know we have another brother by the name of David H. Hawkins, who is also an attorney. Mr. Hawkins, are you on the line?
I am, good sister. How are you this evening?
I am fine. Thank you so much, sir, for being here and taking out your time and your busy schedule. And I want to say that Judge Michelle Muhammad, our sister and co-host, you know, she's always so, she knows, you know, she's just a beautiful and pioneer sister up there on the bench in Mount Vernon. You know, she knows so many attorneys, she knows so much talent, and she's just a beautiful sister. And so these are guests that she has helped us to bring on tonight. So, brothers, we do appreciate you all coming on the show. Let me read a little bit about Brother Wagstaff. Brother Attorney Wagstaff, his bio, it says that he is selfless. His selfless commitment to social justice is the consistent driving force behind his work in the community and as an attorney and principal of the Wagstaff firm. Attorney Wagstaff has developed trial strategies. He's a trial attorney, so jury selection through post-trial activities. Also, Attorney Wagstaff, his practice concentrates civil rights, litigation, criminal defense, and municipal law. I mean, brother has a wide host of actual, you know, his experience. He has cases that have covered New York's Law Journal, media outlets such as New York Times, MSNBC, ABC, and CNN. And so I want to go ahead and stop there because we're going to talk more about our brother as he talks to us about his practice and what he does. So thank you once again, Brother Attorney Wagstaff, for coming on. And I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about Attorney David H. Hawkins. And Mr. Hawkins actually is from Dallas, Texas. And he, currently he's in Connecticut. He had a dream he would be an attorney in the eighth grade after watching the TV show L.A. Law. And that's interesting. And so here he is. And to make his vision an actuality, he says he earned a Bachelor of Science degree in political science from Mercy College and went on to receive his master's in political science, and he graduated magna cum laude. He also received a Juris Doctorate from SUNY's University at Buffalo School of Law, and that's in May 2000. He's a private practitioner. and he works a lot. He's consistently appointed to the 18B assigned council panel, and that's in Westchester County. That's in Mount Vernon, New York, and that's working with the underserved communities. He has also, he says, worked with underserved communities since 2006. He has earned a reputation as a tenacious attorney with a meticulous attention to detail and dedication to upholding the laws of criminal justice. And he's, you know, again, this is bench trials, jury trials, discovery, and all the things that a defense attorney must do to be a good defense attorney. So that's what our conversation is going to be about. Just want to add that Mr. Hawkins is an active member of the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated, and he's married and, you know, just a wonderful brother with children. So I wanted to go ahead and thank you all again for coming on. And I know Brother Warren, one of our attorneys, he's another defense attorney. He's scheduled to come on. He called in to let me know he was gonna. He's running. And so when Brother Warren comes on, please, you know, press number one so you can get in the host queue. But Sister Nichelle, let's go ahead and start this conversation. And so I would start with Brother Wagstaff, and I'd ask you to go ahead and introduce yourself and talk to us about your practice areas.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me. And again, my name is William Wagstaff, and I am a civil rights and criminal defense attorney primarily. I have an office in White Plains, New York, as well as in Manhattan. And I have had this passion probably since fifth or sixth grade, because my first cousin who had come to live with us was unfortunately in and out of jail. And while I don't forgive someone for doing the wrong thing, there should always be justice. And the narratives that I was getting about the circumstances and the way he was being treated consistently made me feel that there was ongoing injustice that he was being subjected to. And I wanted to do something about it. He was the person who I modeled myself after from a style and personality standpoint, and that was what gave me the passion. And when I realized in high school that the MBA was probably not going to happen, that was leaving me with one option and one option only, which was to be an attorney, which is something that I've manifested with God's permission, and I'm extremely happy to be here this evening.
Thank you so much. Attorney Hawkins, same question, if you don't mind. Introduce yourself and talk to us about your practice area.
Sure. Being an attorney, I know we can all be verbose at times, so I'll, in the interest of brevity, again, I appreciate being here and being asked to sit on this panel with some of my esteemed colleagues and with someone who I appear before on a regular basis, so I just appreciate the opportunity. My practice, I graduated in 2000. I have a general practice. I do civil, criminal, family. I do draft wills, which are a necessary thing, healthcare proxies, things of that nature, estate stuff in our community. But I have a particular concentration in criminal law. It's something that interests me. When I got to law school, I believe the civil rights side was more so on my heart, especially in our community, although I saw L.A. law as a teenager, and it was my first representation in seeing African-American attorneys on TV, which astounded me and my soul. And I said, well, wait a minute, I didn't know that that was something that was afforded to us and those in our community. And so looking at Blair Underwood, and I said, well, you know, I could do that. I could see he's got, he gets to get in front of folks. He gets to speak, and he, he dresses well. I said, wow, that's outstanding. But what really changed my focus, and I'm going to date myself, is the Eleanor Bumpers case. And the disrespect that was shown to this elderly African-American woman by the New York City Police Department and taking her life changed my outlook on why I wanted to practice law. And so it was at that point, although I have been playing football all throughout high school and into college, all of my eggs were in one basket. I had determined long ago that I was going to go to law school. If I made it to the NFL, great. If not, all my eggs were going to be in the basket of going to law school. And the Eleanor Bumpers case is the primary reason why I decided and said I had to practice law and do this for my community.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And so, you know, you all both brought us right into our conversation about what makes a good a defense attorney. So some of this is, you know, zealous prosecutor of constitutional rights, loyal client advocate, courageous defender in court, ethical and principled representative, you know, professional and highly qualified, confidential, fair-minded. You know, but as we as you keep, both of you all referred to how, especially in our community, you know, afforded to us. You know, we know that this criminal justice system or some of the laws are used against our community disproportionately. And so sometimes as black lawyers, you know, we see our people, we come into contact with black people in these courts, and they're facing charges and challenges and consequences. And so it's especially important to me, and tell me if y'all agree, and if so, why you agree, you know, that we be zealous defenders, you know, of our people or anybody that hires us. Of course, we work for whoever, but does anybody, you know, that's really one of the thrusts, you know, with us being black, many of these our clients who are really jeopardized, the factors that affect our community. How do you all see that in your role as you know, really being zealous? And really, what can you explain to the audience what zealous representation even means to you?
Well, I can say for myself, I always keep focused on the fact that before I'm an attorney, I'm a black man.
Yes,
and I come
sir.
Into
yes,
each
sir.
Interactions with the experience of a black man, and that I need to carry with me a level of compassion for the shared black experience when I'm representing our people. And that most of the time, my adversary, who's a white person, does not have the same sensitivities. Oftentimes, especially if I'm not before Judge Michelle, I have someone who has not had the same experience, and they often think of black people as we're just all the same. They think of us as the monolith, especially young black men. So understanding that depth in certain circumstances is already stacked, and then I put myself in their shoes, it gives me a passion that I don't think is there when you have some of the non-black attorneys that are just going through the motions because this is their vocation. And I think that if that's the backdrop in which you are advocating, it already gives you an advantage, and your client is getting the benefit of someone that understands them. And many of the things that they're just viewing outright as criminal, you understand that it may just be cultural but not criminal. The way that we engage each other, the way that we socialize, there's so many aspects of that that they've already decided to criminalize, but really that's part of our culture. And if we're being honest, we have been cultured in the way we are because of the slave masters and the way that they treated our ancestors. So before you criminalize us, how about you reflect on it? Was your triple great grandfather that created a lot of the underpinnings and the way that we are and how we are and the things we've had to do to survive? So I think that this is more than just a job for me. This is a calling. I think it is an honor to be able to stand in the gap for our people and do what would be making our ancestors proud if they were here today.
Yes, sir. Beautiful.
Well,
thank you for that.
Right.
Beautiful. To piggyback and to say good evening to my good brother Will, my fellow soldier in the trenches, what he said was so apropos. My take, and I thought about this earlier, is you have to want to do this work. It may seem trite, but you have to want to do this work. And if this is not something that you want to do, then you are not going to give your, in representing whomever it be, whoever it may be. As my dear brother said, the first thing, and it often, you have to confront it, is walking into the courthouse, and most of the time these folks want to know who you are. You can be suited and booted, have your briefcase, and you can have your cases. They want to know who you are. You don't see that with your other colleagues. So once you have to deal with that, you have to set those individuals in their particular places and parameters. Then you have to go before a court that already has an inherent bias towards you. And it has an inherent bias towards your client. So zealous advocacy for me entails a number of different things. And one is always being prepared. We don't have the luxury, and I tell my children this all the time, you don't have the luxury to be second best. You don't have the luxury to rest on one's laurels or to have an off day to be on every day. We don't have the ability to slack and take things for granted because they're looking at us, they are evaluating us, and this is their particular assessment of us. And so we have to come in there prepared, knowing our clients, knowing our cases, knowing the law, thereby garnering their respect when they see you. Because, again, as my brother said, they will treat you no differently than the clients you represent.
Yes, sir. That is so beautiful. Thank you for that. And I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic for our brother attorney, Warren Muhammad, who I do see has joined our panel. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Warren.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Pam. I apologize. I had to take my computer into the repair shop, my main computer. It was an emergency. I had to get it in for some repair.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. So in joining this particular panel, I don't know if you heard Brother Wagstaff and Brother Hawkins, who were just so dynamic in their conversation. Sister Judge Michelle, our co-host, please jump in and say some things as well. But we were talking, they were talking a little bit about the bias and the racism. Sister Michelle, were you going to say something?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I want to welcome Brother Warren, give him the greetings. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Nice to have you.
Salam.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead, family. Yes, ma'am.
So, yeah, so with the bias and the racism and, you know, and the need for zealous representation of our clients and how we as black lawyers, because the conversation is about being a good defense attorney. What does that look like? Why is that important? And actually, we even threw in, we didn't throw it in, we're striving to be righteous. We're striving to be better. You know, there's always that negative, you know, sometimes whatever about lawyers. And so we're striving to do right. And so we're saying that with racism that's inherent, you know, that's in the system, what impact does that put on our perception as to how we approach it? And I know Brother Wagstaff was saying, hey, you know, we got to prepare. I know Brother Hawkins, I heard him, you know, so eloquently talk about, you know, really the duty as a black person. And I wanted to put out here, Brother Warren, and bring you into the conversation. When we talk about defense attorneys' roles and objectives, it says a defense lawyer represents the client's best interest. at all stages of a legal proceeding. And I think that's very interesting because we know what that means. You know, I represent the client and what's in that client's best interest. So, Brother Warren, did you want to, can you, you know, you've been practicing law, Brother Attorney's been, Brother Warren has been a judge, been on the bench, he's been out here for years. So give us some of your wisdom as to defense work.
Yes, Master Chan. Well, I caught the last part of the last brother that preceded me. I didn't catch his name, but I concur with the part that I heard.
Wagstaff.
Who was that?
Attorney Wagstaff. His name is Wagstaff, William Wagstaff.
Okay, greetings to you, brother. And what's the other brother's name?
And the other
greetings,
brother,
my
is,
brother.
His name is Attorney Hawkins. And that's Brother David Hawkins. And they both out of the New York area. So, yes, sir, we got some real heavy hitters on the phone tonight, Brother Warren.
Right.
That's right.
Good evening, Brother Muhammad. How are you?
Yeah, I don't know if he's...
Brother Muhammad. How are you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, his call dropped. We're going to keep going. So
okay.
let's talk about, again, just kind of going with what I said in terms of the best interest at all stages. I mean, with the loyalty factor, and I see he's back again, but, you know, we talked about the preparation. So, Brother Warren, we're bringing you back in. Did you want to go ahead and
yep.
make some comments?
Yes, ma'am. For some reason it dropped. This is all I was about to speak.
Okay, yes,
but,
sir.
But one of the things that I would say was we have to strive for excellence and really learn our craft. It's like with any profession or trade or any discipline, there's a craft to it. And we have to really study and learn our craft. I was in a trial in a hearing last week, and I came in, and that was a murder trial taking place immediately after my hearing, and it had been going on as well. And I heard the judge admonishing both sets of attorneys, the prosecution and the defense, admonishing them that she would not continue to tolerate speaking objections. She said, know your objections, make your objections, and then wait for a ruling. And it's a frustrating, and I've been on the bench as well. It's frustrating when attorneys haven't studied the craft and know how to make a proper objection and want to speak. Well, he said this and he didn't say that. That's not an objection. It's either hearsay or relevance. You have to, and that's all part of learning the craft. And if you really study the craft and learn the craft, you'll have a much easier time in dealing with judges, because they can become frustrated with attorneys who haven't put in the work and the diligence to really understand and know how to apply the craft of being a trial lawyer. So that's one of the things that I find very important, and I encourage all young attorneys. I'm an old attorney now, in my 43rd year, but. And it's a constant study and practice of understanding the nuances of the craft of trial.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very good. And so I want to bring it a different thought or along with this. Now, we know that black lawyers make up a very small percentage of lawyers in this country. An article entitled, Why the U.S. Needs Black Lawyers Even More Than It Needs Black Police, that was an article written in 2015 by Yolanda Young, and it came out of the whole Ferguson and the murder of Michael Brown. And, you know, part of it talks about how 88% of the lawyers at that time, all lawyers are white, and only 4.8% are black. you know, it talked about the racial biases, like the 19, they talk about how in 2011 study of New York's district attorney's office found that black defendants are 19% more likely than white defendants to be offered plea deals that included jail or prison. You know, that blacks, you know, people charged with misdemeanor offenses or drug offenses were also more likely than white people to be held in jail or prison through arraignment. You know, it talked about how white attorneys really may have biases that result in unfavorable outcomes, because we know the law is subjective. And so I think we need to go into in looking and making sure that your clients, you represent that person's best interest. We're talking about courage as well. You know, we're talking about, because we're standing up a lot of times like David and Goliath, you know, having the smooth stone, you know, against a system that our people, our clients, they what can they do? And so I know, Brother Hawkins, I think you represent underserved communities sometimes, people who are potentially don't have money as much. Is that correct? That may need lawyers. And I know, Brother William Wagstaff, it's my understanding that you've done some police brutality cases and many cases where courage is really necessary to stand up for our people. So I'm going to talk about some of those things.
Well, a portion of my practice, although I am in a private practice, I do work under the 18B assigned counsel panel in Westchester, mm-hmm. as well as the assigned counsel panel in Connecticut.
Okay.
So those programs represent those individuals that cannot afford, with the federal income guidelines applied, counsel. And so they are afforded counsel in their criminal matters. So I have been doing that work for some time. I've been on the panel in Westchester for a number of years, and recently on the panel in Connecticut. My main purpose on getting on these panels was not to make money, because you cannot become wealthy representing indigent defendants. That's not why you do it. You do it because there's a need and there's a love, and you know that many individuals in our community need representation. And so when I first got on the panel, I had noticed that there are not a lot of attorneys that looked like me representing the client base that I had been representing.
Wow.
And so I think the optics, and just in the interest of transparency, and the optics to me were atrocious, to say the least, where you had black defendants represented by white attorneys. And in my estimation, going through the motions and not being zealous advocates, as we're discussing this evening. And it was to them, as my brother Willie Wagstaff said, it was mainly a vocation for them. It was a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was alarming, frightening, disgusting, because I know the amount of work it takes in order to extricate one's client from a particular situation. And frankly, I didn't see that. But I go back to my initial statement. You can't do this for any type of remuneration. This is something that you want to do, love to do. It is in your heart to do. And again, I go back to Eleanor Bumpers changing my life and my conversation with my father, and him saying, you can always go and make some money, and there's nothing wrong with that if that's what you want. But if you want to make a difference and represent your community, this is what you need to do.
Yes, sir. That's right. Oh, that's beautiful. Mr. Hawkins. Yes. And so, Mr. Hawkins, were you finished? Did you want to?
No. I was not, but one thing I could just say, when we talk about those statistics, and I'll be very brief, the statistics that you had read off regarding African-American attorneys and the dearth of African-American attorneys, I can tell you this. When I went into law school in 1997, the NALP statistics, and I know Brother Muhammad and my brother Will Wagstaff and Fred Johnson also know this, there was maybe between 2 and 4% of African-American attorneys in firms and in certain other sectors of the legal profession. You had a ton of us in the public interest field. But in terms of other fields, there was a dearth. That was back in 97. I graduated in 2000. The NALP statistics didn't change. It is now 2022. The NALP statistics, National Association of Law Practitioners, it has not changed. It has not moved the needle.
Great point.
And to me, that's a very deliberate thing.
That's right.
I'd like to comment.
Go ahead, my brother. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to comment on when Sister Perrin, you referred to the courage. Another aspect of the courage is not always the courage of the judge or what have. Sometimes it's the courage of the case. And of the case itself.
Okay.
And what I mean is that sometimes, well, if you know, in a criminal context, you're up against a district attorney office with a vast array of resources. And in the civil litigation, I do personal injury and medical malpractice, and you're often up against these huge law firms with unlimited resources as well. And they can try to, and they always do try to intimidate you with the amount of work and devotions and paperwork and just the magnitude of the case itself. And you really have to, you tighten your belt buckle and have the courage to walk into the lines, as it were, and face them down and be willing to do the work. I've never been in a large firm. Quite often, it's been myself and the secretary and, an assistant or something. And we just have to, I've had many nights where I got a little sleep, but you have to do the work. So you have to take on the courage or the challenge of the work itself. And I thank God I've generally pretty well been successful. But it's a mental attitude that you have to take of, as you said, the David against Goliath mentality. And no matter how many resources and research assistants, whatever they have to bring against me, I just have to take the mentality that they cannot and will not defeat me. So you have to have a warrior spirit. I guess that's what I'm trying to get. You really have to have a warrior spirit in going up against these foes.
Yes, sir. That's beautiful. And I just, Brother Wagstaff, I know you want to come in. So, I just want to put out there that, the truth, when you're standing on truth, that's one issue. And even when I put in our title today, the righteous defenders, that we're striving to be, whoever your God or your principal is, then do we look sometimes to the God for help because we're standing on truth. Yes, sir. Brother Wagstaff, did you want to join in on this particular issue? I know you have a lot to say.
Close the point on courage. I want to speak to that and then also grab from what Robert said about preparation. And some of the courage for me, and Judge Michelle, put your finger on one here, but some of the courage is in recognizing that the judge is a referee, that the judge is not supposed to be in the game. and being willing to stand up to the judge when the judge is being too active, trying to put his or her imprint on him, and be dismissive of your client's rights. Which I find a lot of attorneys are scared of judges because they hear that in this particular case, the judge can be up later where the preparation comes in if you know what the record is, if you are tight,
yes,
and you know the law.
Your phone is a, can you, your phone's a little bit, can you come a little bit over to the left? Brother Wagstaff, we want to hear you.
Is this better?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Is that better?
Yes, that's much better. Much better. Yes, sir.
Okay. So what I was saying is that the courage piece also entails the courage to deal with the judge appropriately and understand that the judge is largely supposed to be a referee. And there are often times when the judges try to input themselves and have too much involvement in the litigation. And many attorneys are fearful of standing up to the judge and advocating for their client. But as Brother Muhammad said, being in the position where you know your record and you are prepared, you don't have the same fear of the judge because you know that you are going to do what needs to be done. You can convey your message to the jury. You're in the position where you know that if it needs to go up to a higher court, that your record is protected. And for me, I had a recent incident where I joined the case late because the client came to me after they had a poor experience with their public defender. And the judge was trying to rush the case and make it go out to a judge for assignment to start the trial. And I said, well, Your Honor, I just got the case. And the judge said, well, I don't know what there really is to look at. It's just a video case. What is there about this case? And I said, respectfully, Your Honor, the DA stands here and says that they represent the people of the state of New York. My client is among those people, and I'm not going to allow you to trample his rights. If I don't have the opportunity to review the evidence, if I don't have the opportunity to make the appropriate motion, then his constitutional rights are not protected, and I'm not going to allow you to run through this. And you could see people in the courtroom saying, well, what's wrong with him? Is he crazy? But I had already known what my theory of the case was, knew that there was evidence that I could use to defend my client successfully. So I'm not going to allow you to just rush the case, force us to go faster than it needs to be before I get up to speed. The following court appearance, the judge had a different tune, and the judge started changing his energy towards the DA. Well, you know that this case could end up in an acquittal. You may want to think about offering probation. And even the ADA, who happened to be a brother, later laughed and said, whatever you said last time clearly changed the judge's perspective, but most attorneys are not going to take that position because they're thinking about the next case or they're thinking about what the judge may do to them. And that's the courage that I think we, representing our people, must exhibit in doing this work.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
That's right.
Because this study, I'm looking at, it says that inadequate legal defense has been suggested as one of the largest factors in wrongful convictions, as the defense attorney is supposed to protect the defendant from the mistakes of others that could have occurred early in the case, such as police misconduct, prosecutorial misconduct, or issues with eyewitness testimony. So, yes, this ineffective assistance or inadequate defense, you know, has really harmed a lot of our people. And that's one of the reasons why I think I asked you, Brother Hawkins, for your input, because the question is, just because people are poor, do they not deserve, do they deserve adequate legal representation? You know, I think that's very important in our community.
Sister Muhammad, I understand that the Sixth Amendment indicates that you are entitled to a defense.
That's right.
You are afforded a defense attorney. That's constitutional, whether it be federal, but state protections as well. You are afforded counsel. doesn't say if you're wealthy, you should have counsel. Doesn't say if you're white, you should only be entitled to counsel. It affords counsel as a statutory and constitutional right. As such, you should get the best counsel possible. I don't care if it is assigned to you or if you can afford it. And for me, being assigned makes me work harder because, again, these communities that I represent, black and brown communities, have a dearth of adequate and effective representation. And if we don't stand in the gap and step up to this, all to me is lost. These folks are coming for help. You are not to go through the motions. You are to take the time to meet with your clients, to study the case, study the law. As my brother said, come up with theories. Do motion practice. Have hearings. And do all that you can do to represent that individual manner you possibly can. And it's just been my experience, when doing these things, you are able to provide the proper representation and extricate one's clients from the particular pitfalls that have befallen them. And that then becomes, to me, kind of a, I guess a foundation for when folks see us come into the courtroom and they say, okay, this attorney's on their game. I know I'm up for a fight. I know this person is going to do this work. Let me go ahead. And the atmosphere has changed. As my brother William Wagstaff said, addressing certain judges in a certain manner changes the atmosphere.
That's
and you
right.
do that. You do that with the district attorneys. You do that with judges. And I can just say this. There are plenty of judges that I appear before that are rubber stamping things that district attorneys do. And it burns my britches, to quote my father, my late father, because just rubber stamping. You are rubber stamping things. And as my brother William said, they have, and my brother, brother Muhammad has said, they have the almighty power and resources of the state behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Bludgeon
That's right.
these Go black and brown communities into taking criminal convictions or basically bludgeoning you to the point where you give up because you're going through a process. And I can just say this, and I can put this out, and I'm not trying to pander, but I can say when I go before my beloved sister in Mount Vernon, by God, I know I have a shot. I know that she is not going to take any guff and any nonsense
That's right.
from the district attorney's office, and I know that there's not going to be a rubber stamp. And I have many a client that say, who's on the bench? And I'll say, Judge Johnson. And they say, well, at least we got a shot. You daggone Skippy, we did.
Beautiful. All praises due to Allah. Yeah.
Yes.
Sister Pam, if I could jump in, beloved, I've been quiet the whole time. Listen to the counselors, do what they do, you know, and I just wanted to follow up. Brother Warren makes a good case about the judges and being prepared before those judges. So as black defense attorneys, you know, all three of these guys know exactly what needs to be done. You must be prepared. We have to be over-prepared. And, you know, the judges are looking. Another thing I wanted to state is that, you know, New York State just did a study recently. And if people think that the opportunities and there are plenty of black lawyers out there, no big deal. The study that came out just recently still spoke to the fact that, you know, there's still a certain amount of racism and bias in the court system. In 2022, as Hawkins reminded, the statistics haven't changed. It's still there. You know, the black attorneys work harder. The people are not getting representation sometimes that they need. There's still this desire to just cookie cutter, take the plea and move on. And so the defense bar, especially our own people, becomes so essential and is still essential. And so I appreciate these brothers for being on the front line. We need them. Now, preparation is key. As they indicated, you got to know everything. You have to have every case in your back pocket. And Wagstaff could tell you, because I've seen him dance in a courtroom with the way he's been prepared. Preparation is key for the black defense attorney, because you're usually going into a place where maybe the judge is not black and maybe the information is stacked against you. And you have to really be a zealous advocate by your preparation. The fact that you've learned all the cases that are involved, you know what's going on with your case, you know what you need to demand, et cetera. Another thing I wanted to kill the theory that you can't have a court-appointed attorney because they're not good. The defense attorneys that do the work that Counsel Hawkins, Mr. Wagstaff has done, and maybe even Brother Warren, being court-appointed does not make them bad lawyers. In fact, those lawyers tend to be to do a good job because they're assigned by the court. They usually know the judge. They usually have worked their way into that particular courtroom. And so they're able to navigate a little better than someone that's coming in from a different area. So you can get good representation from the 18B lawyers like Counsel Hawkins, Mr. Wagstaff at one point. They come prepared. They know what needs to be done. They know the people in the room and they know the approach to take. So for those out there that think the court-appointed attorneys are not good, don't ever think that. And so this zealous representation, though, and serving our community is key, and there's something about the black lawyer representing the black or the Latino person and what they bring to it, as Mr. Wagstaff talked about, a certain experience that you know what the community is going through. You've been there. And so you're able to give that zealous representation that somebody may not be able to bring into that room. Yes, ma'am, Sister Pamela.
I wanted to say we're going to open up the mic. And if anyone has a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. And we want to take questions and comments. And thank you very much. Just press number 1, get in the host queue. And I also wanted to say, Judge Michelle, that's like a conversation you and I were having earlier about location and jurisdictions and states, because we're down here in the South. We're in Texas. And so we can't always say that the court-appointed attorneys have the quality in all states that they may have in your state or your county or your jurisdiction. So it depends on, some of the states, and it just depends on some of the people. And so that, we're down here in the South, so we've got some other issues a lot of times with the racial bias and even the lack of resources. Like when we had court-appointed attorneys in the state of Texas, at one point, there was no budget, so you may have a lawyer in an office with no oversight. He's just buddy-buddy with the judge, representing somebody, and the judge is not going to hold him accountable. So you may not get the type of legal representation that you need. And I also wanted to say,
yes, ma'am.
I want to throw this out, and we're going to screen and take a call, and you all please talk. You got to screen our callers. But I wanted to say that, so in this article I was reading about lawyers and the need for black lawyers, the author made the comment that the legal profession, not only is it whiter, she said the job is subjective. And I thought that was so interesting, because it's like, what does that mean? What she's saying is that y'all know law is the opinion of the people that are who have the power in the hands at the time. Sometimes the law is what the opinion, you know, what the judge's opinion is, what the prosecutor's opinion is. And that's one of the things that makes it so dangerous. But I think in the zealous representation, this is where the power of persuasion and the power of advocating is so important. But, you know, talk to the people about how, isn't that true? Am I the only person that notices how, if, you know, the law says one thing, maybe if it's a young white male who has drugs, but the law then demands that he has future and that this is not a really harsh crime, but if it's a young black male with the same offense, then the law might say, you know, interpretation is subjective. So that's a unique, and this is where all that bias and all that racism hides. That's what I'm trying to make the point. Anybody?
I think the challenge is that you have, in those situations, a prosecutor who is often white and a judge who's also often white, and potentially a white defendant who has an attorney who is part of the good old boys club. So those interpretations of the law or the judge and their willingness to use their discretion or the prosecutor's ability to use their prosecutorial discretion all works in their favor. Whereas when it becomes a black or brown person, they want to hold you to the strict letter of the law. And there's no interpretation. There's no discretion. There's this person is exactly who we said they are in that criminal complaint, but we're not really interested in anything outside of that. So the mitigation, which we are, if you're doing your job, putting together a mitigation package to provide not only the prosecutor, but the judge with an alternative perspective of your client, is where that allows them, if you're advocating well, to learn more about your client. And they're probably never going to view them the way they would view a white defendant, but at least give you some opportunity to say, hey, it's not just cut and dry. This is the statute. This is the allegation. This is the penalty. And that's something, unfortunately, our people most of the time don't get the benefit of.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to go ahead and take this caller. We're going to take a call from Sister Ula. Sister Ula.
Oh, well, I don't come off, Sister Pamela. How you doing, Sister?
I'm fine. Can you hear me? My life's great. Yes, ma'am, I can hear you. Yes, ma'am.
Praise you a lot. I had a comment, and it hit me like a ton of bricks while I was on the in the queue. As attorneys, still have a self-commitment and a responsibility to take care of your nutritional needs so that you don't fall victim to any health crisis. You have to. I was reading an herbal book by a black herbalist, and he said there were three things that are necessary: recreation, relaxation, and rest. And I never get any recreation. I have exercise. Exercise is not in that category. That's a different one altogether. I just want to share that with you all and praying that these things will assist you in your profession. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so
thank
much
you
for doing
that.
Thank you, sis.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And, and so as we go on, like I say, if anyone has a question or a comment and would like to get into the host queue and ask these attorneys a question or a comment, please press the number 1. And so we're going to go to the second part of this conversation, which is talking about the impact, our ability to impact communities in our work as attorneys. And did anyone want to, you know, just kind of go into that? And I know my question, I think, is let's see. Yeah, I had some questions about that for you all. Wanted to talk about what are the lawyers' roles in trying to change society and furtherance of public good and seeking justice, any kind of opportunities we see to help others that we think that, you know, are interests that you may find interesting as an attorney. What have you done? And you see as important. Yes, go right ahead, Brother Warren.
Yes, ma'am. I didn't realize my phone was on mute, and I was trying to get in on your previous subject. If I may, concerning what we were talking about, and it kind of relates to what I was saying about courage.
Yes, sir.
In the racism and the bias in the courtroom or what have you, I was faced being here in Texas in Harris County early in my career. I would say the norm that I would have an all white jury, white judge, white prosecutors, black client, and all white jury. And that's where that courage piece really came in, because I realized that I could not let that be an excuse standing in the way of my black client getting some justice. So I had to embark on a journey to learn the art of persuasion and how to effectively persuade a panel of white people to agree with me and rule in favor of my client. And it often had little to do with law itself, but it was understanding the art of persuasion and in communicating them and how to press the right button on an all-white panel, getting them to set aside, not to abandon their prejudice and biases, but it's something in the art of persuasion called setting aside. Just for this one occasion, you might think all black people stink, but getting them to be able to set aside that I still think all black people stink, but not this particular one at this particular time. That's all I want from them.
Yes,
that's all I want.
That's exactly right.
All I want is at this particular time, at this particular instance, this one wasn't stinking at that particular time, you know. And that really involves a study of persuasion outside of the realm of law itself. You know, so I just wanted to put that in. We have to have a broad base of experience and understanding and knowledge and study to be successful advocates. And I thank God I learned.
Thank you, Brother. Kind of dovetails into what I said before. We always have to come in prepared.
Right.
Opportunity to have an off day. Because, again,
right,
we come in there representing not only our clients, but it's unfortunate, but we have the hopes and representation and dreams of the entire African-American diaspora on our backs, because they're going
That's
to
right.
look at us, and if we fail, oh, they're all this way. He may have done the crime, but he's horrible as an attorney. They're all bad, and there's a tremendous generalization and lumping us in. So we have to be good. And as Brother Muhammad said, on that particular day, when I convinced that particular jury and that particular judge, they'll say, okay, well, maybe not all 100, 99 are bad, but he was good. So we like that one.
Yeah. And like you say, because that's one of the purposes here, and we're going to take a caller, but we want to inform our listeners what they need to look for in lawyers that they're hiring. You know, what is a defense lawyer looking like some issues such as empathy, good relational skills, competent, you know, ensure that that your information stays private, like you say, demonstrable characteristics that you think, maybe I'll look at this lawyer, maybe I'll hire this lawyer, because heaven forbid they take that jump and try to overcompensate by hiring some white attorney because they believe the foolishness about no black attorneys competent, because we know
That's
sometimes
right.
how they our clients, then they get hurt. You know, you give that
mm-hmm.
white attorney all your money, you know, or whatever.
That's
you
right.
can't even get them on the phone a lot of the time, you know, or they may not, you know, they may have some biases. You just never know. So let's encourage, that's our point. We want to encourage especially black attorneys who are good defense attorneys and who care about their community. That's what we're about. So we're going to take these two callers, actually. I know we have Sister Marguerite. Sister Marguerite, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam to all your presenters here, and they're very, very entertaining and informative.
I have a question. Awesome panel.
When you mentioned about the judge is supposed to be the referee, and I happened to be watching, I think it was a Netflix series, and it was about the thing about Pam. It was a Dateline series about, and it was about Pam Huff out of Missouri who murdered a woman and pinned it on her husband, the woman's husband. And this guy spent a lot of time in jail, But what was interesting was the part that the judge played in the trial. Now, she happened to be the friend from high school of the prosecutor, and, you know, come to find out, people on the jury knew the prosecutor's family, and, you know, some other things came out. The judge wouldn't let him, the defense, bring in pertinent information, and on top of that, they hid a lot of the photos from the crime scene that would have shown this guy was innocent. What recourse do you have for a judge who takes such obvious sides in a case and your client ends up in prison?
Well, I think you have two. The most obvious recourse is appeal. I think in addition to that, in most states, I can certainly speak to New York and New Jersey where I practice, there's a judicial committee that you can file a grievance against. The judges are not above being punished. They're not above being censored. They're not above, if the conduct is egregious, and they're being removed from the bench. But I think there's an intimidation factor from the attorneys and certainly from the public that nobody thinks or believes that there is any recourse for a judge overstepping his or her boundaries to use the tools that are available to us. And that oftentimes is based on a lack of information. We don't know that there is a place that you can go to complain about an attorney if the attorney didn't provide you with the representation that you deserve, about a judge if the judge did not give you respect or went beyond what their robe allows them to do. So there are recourses, sister.
Definitely are. As my brother has indicated, and Judge Johnson knows, judges are held to what they call judicial canons. And if they do not follow those canons, much like a grievance committee for attorneys, you can go and file grievances against judges. And as my brother has indicated, you cannot be fearful if you think that they're wrong and there's some wrongdoing, especially if it comes out post-trial, post-conviction. So there are avenues that you can use and vehicles you can use to bring some type of redress or get some redress.
That's right. And let me just jump in really quickly, Sister Marguerite. One of the things that gave me fuel to want to become a judge is because you can have great attorneys, but if the judges are biased and if the judges are corrupt, then the justice stops right there. And so I came away from being an attorney and became a judge. And as much as I miss practicing, because, you know, you advocate like crazy, and if you like that kind of stuff, which I did, and I did well at it, you know, every now and again, being up on the bench, it's a little different. But I understood what my role is and why it was important, by Allah's permission, to go ahead and jump in and be a judge, because we needed help on that level as well. And I just want to say, from the Muslim program, when we have what the Muslims want, one of the things we want, point number two, is we want justice, equal justice under the law. We want justice applied equally to all, regardless of creed or class or color. And sometimes having brothers and sisters even on the bench is important to ensure that equality, at least right now in this man's world in this time. And so, yes, ma'am, a very good point, sister. But trust me, the judges, they do that. But we have ways that we can actually, as the attorneys indicated, to call them out on any corruption we think is there, pointing out relationships, et cetera. A jury should never have a relationship with a prosecutor or the judges. In fact, when I impanel a jury, one of the first questions we ask before they sit there is whether or not you know anybody in this case. And if somebody misrepresents that they don't know anybody here and then it's later found out they know somebody, mistrial, you know, the judge included. And so, yes, ma'am, there is ways, and we just got to educate our people on what they need to do. But with attorneys like Brother Warren, Brother William, and Brother David Hawkins that are on the case, you know what I mean? They know what to do, and they will take those steps to make sure they protect our community. So thank you for the question, sis.
Well, I would also like to say that you all are the ones that we should be saying constantly that we thank you for your service, because you truly do service for the people.
All praise is due to Allah. Yes, they do.
Thank you, Sister Marguerite. Assalamualaikum. And the next caller we're going to take is Brother Louis Ali. Brother Louis Ali. Assalamualaikum, Brother Louis.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Pam and Sister Michelle. How y'all doing?
All right, brother. Thanks for calling in. Praise be to Allah.
I'm calling in to thank y'all for holding this powerful platform that Dr. Ava Muhammad set up down.
Yes, sir.
Come on now, brother. That's right.
It's very, very important, probably more important than a lot of us know, because I always said that Dr. Ava Muhammad, I used to tell her she was the last black woman standing with a platform that still loved the black man, the black God, and the black nation. See, most of our people who have national platforms, particularly black women, they don't necessarily have a pure love or empathy for black men. And our ignorance has had a lot to do with that. And Dr. Ava Muhammad and I have spoken about it many times, about what's in between us that's causing us to dislike one another and show the type of disdain that we've shown for one another, because we could never make our community a safe and decent place to live if we don't heal that. And this leads to the point, I heard one of the brothers, one of the attorneys, saying that there was only, I think he said maybe 2% black lawyers. Is that correct?
The math statistics that I have indicated have not changed since I entered law school in 97. And when I graduated in 2000, I believe if you look at the amount of African-American attorneys in any type of white shoe law firms, and especially in the partner ranks, it's even less than that. Again, most African-American attorneys who go into those firms usually in this two to five years, they're burned out. They've made enough money maybe to pay back their law school loans, but they have not earned any type of experience in terms of practice, and they become dissatisfied and often leave the profession.
Well, that's a very true statement. Yeah. I know it to be true, and it's well documented in a book called The American Directory of Certified Uncle Toms, where it takes a lot of the statistics, and not only is it a small, small amount of black lawyers, but there are only 1% black architects and maybe 1.5% black engineers. So we're existing in their world, and we've been socially engineered and forced into integration. And integration has sucked all of the moral fiber and character just about out of us, and it's only a few of us, so we're going to have to push for this separation, because I never signed off on wanting to be integrated, and it completely destroyed all of the black business infrastructure, and we need strong lawyers to help put the Muslim program before Congress and mostly before our people so that we can have a plebiscite and just come to consensus that this system, it just doesn't work for us at all, period.
Yes, no.
With
great
2%,
point. Yes, sir. Yeah.
A plebiscite,
yes,
where we come
yeah.
to a agreement among ourselves. The language of a plebiscite was talked about much during the day of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, particularly under the Republic of New Africa. And I think that with all of these brilliant lawyers, that it's time for us, in the name of Dr. Ava Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, to press to make our own communities a safe and decent place to live. But we got to get this plebiscite before the court of public opinion, and we need to do it ASAP. So again,
Sister Judge, thank you
so much for taking out of your time. I know that you and Sister Pam are very busy, but I can tell you, and I've been telling the brothers this for years, they are trying to maneuver us in a way to get black women to sign our death certificate. And the only thing that's holding it back, really, is black women who still have empathy and love and hope for us as black men. Because if you look
on
the news, brother lawyers, is it Liza Fletcher down in, I think it's Fletcher, down in Memphis, Tennessee?
Yes.
They are saying that a black male abducted that blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman and murdered her, okay? And so what they're doing the same thing that they did during the Leo Frank trial. They're making us, and when they started putting on blackface, they're making it as though decent black men who want to work and take care of their families and their communities, they don't exist. The only kind of black male that they want you to think that exists is this brute, this criminal, this degenerate. And what they want to do really is they just want black women to just blink, and they're going to stroke black women and tell them about black girl magic. But the real magic trick is for them to completely sign off. And it's so sad, Sister Pam, because some of us as Negroes, We really are just playing right into the conspiracy, but boy, does God have something for them. And I know Dr. Ava was just...
That's right.
God, she just knew the conspiracy and would keep us together, and I'm praying that we can stay together and rise and do what we're supposed to do. So thank you for this powerful show, Sister Pam and Sister Michelle. And y'all, anything you need that I can be of assistance, I want to help. May Allah bless y'all.
Yes, sir.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, sir, brother. Assalamu alaikum.
And Brother Lewis, I want to just clarify, because I think the quote might be that there are 4.8% black attorneys, and that was in 2015. So, you know, not much difference from what the brother's saying. He might be saying law firm. We may be saying what the ABA is saying. Total. But it's a very small percentage of black.
If you get the book,
if you get
the book, American Directory of Certified Uncle Toms, it's a must have for everybody in the legal profession. And just read page 41. I got my copy right here.
Okay.
And it's a little old, but it's very near correct still, I believe.
Yeah. All right. All right.
All right.
Let me throw that out. Thank you. Brother Lewis is a great supporter. He really supports family and the black family and marriage between black women and black men.
That's right.
So thank you for that call. And we got one more caller. We got Brother Hoyle. Brother Hoyle is on the line. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Hoyle.
Alaikum salam, family. Excellent show and beautiful call from Brother Lewis.
That's beautiful.
All praise,
that's right.
All praise due to Allah. And thank you, Sister Pamela and team, for keeping the show going. I know Sister Ava will be happy, and it's a beautiful panel. And this is a great show dealing with our justice system, black attorneys. You know, Memphis, Tennessee, mentioning, I'm going to give you a little insight on that Fletcher case. Memphis, Tennessee, believe it or not, you know, CCA, privatized prisons, was started in Shelby County. And if you look it up, right, it started in Shelby County, Tennessee. A lot of, like Dr. Lean said and Sister Ava admitted, a lot of being a majority black city, a lot of experimentation came out through courts, through all kinds of St. Louis, Memphis, you know, you can go to Flint, Jackson, what's going on in Jackson, and all, you know, our majority black cities, Chicago, there's, you know, the war and attack on black people in some form or fashion. But this situation with the white woman getting killed, you know, there's a lot of speculation that she may have been a hit. It may. Now, I want to give you these facts. There are four or five missing black women. This made national news. This made CNN and all the top national news, you know, local breaking news everywhere. I think it may have went worldwide. But we got four or five missing black girls two missing black teenagers right now that probably barely made the local news in Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, we're looking at a situation, you know, I'm not for, it's wrong, you know, I don't want to see anybody. The lady was out 4:30 in the morning jogging, you know, in a, you know, kind of an area where near the University of Memphis. And it's a lot of stuff, you know, the guy, you know, he seeked her out, you know, that's according to the news. But, you know, we just have to make our communities a decent and safe place and teach our young men, because we're at war, you know, and this is going to bring, you know, they're going to look at all black men as it takes me back to, you know, King Kong, you know, this. But Master Farah Muhammad is running things. He's going to make us separate, you know, because our people think that we're still in a post-integration, you know, by Biden, everybody loves us. But, you know, like Minister Sister Ava said, you know, Allah's going to force us to separate. And we're in that time. So, yeah, a beautiful show. And now one question I want to ask. You know, it was an article in the Final Call, Sister Pamela, about a judge who was taking bribes
for exactly.
putting children, yeah, and putting children in jail. It was like a prison to pipeline thing. And this was last week. I don't know what state. I forgot what state.
I think it was Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, right.
Now,
so
who was that speaking up? Was that you, Brother Hawkins?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yeah, do you know that judge's name? Do you know his name?
I don't. I had seen the story. I had read the original story. And then
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, so the story about the judge who was convicted.
Again.
Yeah, they were convicted as federal criminals for selling taking bribes to put black children into prison camps, and that
right.
whole case, we're talking about over 100 children over the years. So sometimes when we talk about some of these judges, you know, not being held accountable, I think it is a justified concern, as Brother Hoyle was bringing up. Beautiful point. This corruption
in
the system.
And it was an article maybe a few years ago was saying that the justice system was mad about not filling the prisons up, you know, that they weren't filling the prisons up in a certain amount of time. I'm on the road, and I don't have all the information, but you all know where I'm talking, where I'm coming from.
Yes,
on this, but beautiful job. And we need black attorneys, black judges, and especially with the Muslim program. Thank you for the show, sister. May Allah bless all of you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for calling in, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, ma'am. That was that of Clinton, I believe, PA. That was Judge Conahan and Judge Chiavella. They were both convicted for the Kids for Cash kickback scheme.
Yes, yes. And that went on for years. Yeah. And those are the type of cases where I guess parents sometimes complained and, you know, they raised the unjust treatment and, you know, perhaps nobody listened for a while. So we need to work on these things. But let me take this caller. I want to see.
Before you take the call, can I jump in quickly?
Sure, because actually we're down to the last minutes. We're actually down to go right ahead. Go right ahead. Yes, sir.
I was going to say I've had since 9 o'clock a client patiently waiting for me because I don't do regular banker's hours, and I have to prepare this brother for a meeting with the district attorney's office tomorrow, but I wanted to jump off and connect with him. But before I left, I wanted to give Sister Nichelle her flowers and circle back to something that you guys said earlier about the importance of conveying to our people that they need to trust in black attorneys, and give a bit of an antidote, a story. And when Sister Nichelle, before she was on the bench, she was the corporation counsel for the city of Mount Vernon. She was the top lawyer for the city of Mount Vernon. And there was a brother that ran down on her and kept saying how he was trying to get things off the ground and needed representation. And there was a white attorney that was in the office, and he had been there for a couple of years. And he was saying to Sister Nichelle, can he help me? I need a white man. I need to step into this meeting with the white man. And she stopped and said, beloved, you got it all wrong. He can't even hold William's bag. And he looked and was puzzled because he didn't realize, and I sat there and she checked him and said, that's the problem with where you're thinking and how you're moving, is that you don't even realize that you have a black man who can provide you three times the service of this white man, but you're so quick to almost beg me to connect you with him because you think white is right. And that was one of the moments where I understood who she truly was and the essence of this black queen. So I want to give her her flowers.
Oh,
her justice before I jump.
I got
thank you so much,
brother.
And thank you, Attorney Wagstaff, for that. And we are actually to 2 minutes. The show is over. We want to thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. Sister Nichelle, I know you want to give the greetings as we go off. I want to thank these attorneys, Attorney Warren F. Muhammad, Attorney William O. Wagstaff III, Attorney David H. Hawkins. Thank you so much for joining us tonight with this wonderful discussion on how it's importance of being a good defense attorney and striving to be righteous defenders and impacting our communities. Again, we want to thank you all for listening. As we started our show, we just want to, you know, remember our sister Abra Muhammad's family. And as we remember her strength as being such a strong defender, we love her. I want to thank the Elevated Places team, Sister Samaya, for helping me on A Time for Justice, Sister Judge Nichelle, Sister Tiffany Muhammad, attorney at law. And we want to ask that you all join us next week on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central. Go to the website and play some of our archives. Again, these attorneys, they are in various cities, and we will have to bring them back on so we can, you know, make the audience more familiar with them and how to reach them.
I want to say this, Sister Pamela.
Go right ahead.
As we close out, we are going to continue the tradition of Sister Ava, Dr. Minister Ava, who was a fierce defender of the black man, of our community and our nation. And so, inshallah, I don't think we can even hold her bag at this point, but inshallah, brothers and Brother Lewis, we will keep the tradition going and defending our black brothers and our nation, and try to do it as good as she did. All praises due to Allah. For our student minister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, counselor, the best defender, all praises due to Allah.
a star of God is what I think the Honorable Minister
That's right.
Farrakhan referred to her as. So thank you all for listening.
Come on.
And, you know, may Allah continue to bless us. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you, brother. We love
you.
Thank you.
On the front line. Have a beautiful day, brothers. Thank you so much. We got you.
Well.
We got you coming.